Hello, and welcome to another edition of Whom Pods Destroy. I'm Terry DeFellin. If you're new to this podcast, then this is a Star Trek discussion show focusing mainly on the original series. I am the host, and each episode I am joined by Graham Sibley and Derek Mantle. On this podcast, we'll be discussing the first season episode, Tomorrow is Yesterday, a light and frothy comedy which actually has a lasting legacy that goes on well into the Star Trek movies. We hope you enjoy our discussions and would like to contribute some discussion points of your own. Contact details for the podcast will be available at the end of the show.
Now, Whom Pods Destroy.
Kirk here, what is it, Scotty?
Progress report, sir. Everything's jury-rigged, but we're coming along with the repairs. We should be able to re-energize in about 4 hours, but...
But what, Scotty?
Well, sir, as I say, the engines are being repaired, but... we've no place to go in this time.
If you
see what I mean. Sir?
Yes, Scotty, carry on.
Too bad, Captain. Maybe I can't go home, but neither can you. You're as much a prisoner in time as I am.
Right, okay. Yes. Welcome to Whom Pods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast. Joining me, Terry DeFellin, is Graham Sibley.
Hello.
And Derek Mantle.
Hello.
We've been on our summer break, and we are back, and we are refreshed from our summer break. Very refreshed from our summer break, and ready to get on with some cracking tracking. Over the next few months leading up to 2019, when it will be one solid month of Star Trek the Motion Picture on its 40th anniversary. Oh yes.
God, this was never...
No, it wasn't planned.
That's why I'm telling you now, because it's being recorded, and that way we can't get out of it.
Well, we can say it's just going to be Terry doing it, talking on his own.
He's got the key to the door, unfortunately.
That would be fine.
And I was wondering where those metal shutters were going to come down into the screen.
So this is why you got us to record one of those... Yes, Terry, that's right.
I agree, Terry. All of your opinions on motion picture are on point. I envy you. Okay, cool. But we're not going to be talking about motion picture yet. That's a heads up for next year. We've got some exciting stuff coming up. But right now we're going to talk about something that is as exciting. And that is the first season episode, Tomorrow is Yesterday. And I'm assuming, guys, we're calling this the first time travel episode of Star Trek. Am I right?
Yes.
First season, before City on the Edge of Forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah? Don't think... I don't mean in terms of chronological order, obviously, but I mean in terms of production order.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. We are.
Is there any information about... Was it written in a particular order?
It was the
story behind the writing of this episode is quite interesting, because it was... I think originally it was intended to be a second part to The Naked Time.
It was supposed to follow on directly from Naked Time.
Yeah, when they finished that one, they said, like, go get us anywhere. Then that's where that ends, and you're meant to go straight into the next one.
I see, okay.
Where they go...
Back in time.
That would be cool.
They're heading back to Earth.
Because if you remember, or for listeners who are unfamiliar, Naked Time ends with them discovering time travel. By accident, in order to escape the gravitational pull of that planet that they're about to get destroyed by. And then it ends that way, with them actually going back in time. But it didn't work out that way. The idea was Tomorrow's Yesterday would follow on from there. But it didn't quite work out that way, so they had to slightly rejig the story. And so it was a black star that the Enterprise hit at the beginning of Tomorrow's Yesterday.
Or a black hole, I suppose.
Hmm. Yeah. They called it a black star, but whatever, that found themselves going back in time to Earth. Whereas, in fact, if they'd had their way, it would have been that time warp that would have then... But this is quite interesting, because that time warp that they discovered by accident in Naked Time never got used again.
Mm.
The preferred method of time travel was the one devised in... what we now know is the rewritten version of Tomorrow is Yesterday, because it's the one that was used in Star Trek The Voyage Home.
The slingshot.
Yes.
Or was it? Because there is Assignment Earth, and we can answer this question when we do our Assignment Earth episode, which is coming up quite soon.
Yes.
But, in fact, echoes of the Voyage Home?
Lots. Yeah? Especially with the remastered version of it.
Mm.
The remastered version, obviously there's a lot of stuff that's been changed or enhanced within within this episode. And a lot of the time travel, the slingshot, borrows a lot from Voyage Home without the big floaty heads disappearing.
I know, yeah. That would have been awesome if they'd been able to squeeze that one.
Oh, it would have been.
But, when they do it again, hopefully they'll remaster these TOS episodes again. And I think we should lobby to have them cut it and then just insert. A nice chippy sequence.
I'm sorry, guys. I hate that bit because it always reminds me of Father Ted. There's one episode of Father Ted. One episode of Father Ted, and it was a Christmas special when Father Ted is running. I think he's been told off by someone or other, and he's running down the beach, and there's his head spinning, talking about him. And I always remember that episode. Catch it. Maybe we should.
No, I know. I now remember the sequence, but I never ever thought of the Voyage Home. Yes. I'm so glad that you're here.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yes. All right. Well, that might be done.
I will go now.
They do need to do to remaster it again, because although this episode probably needed remastering more than any other in the original series, because there was some really, really dodgy green screening in here. It still looks a bit wobbly.
It doesn't hold up now. It's probably the first time I've watched an episode of the remastered ones and thought, yeah, that now looks chunky.
Yeah.
I mean, when you watch them now, even now, you acknowledge, you think, well, these look great for like when they were done, but they don't look that good now. But this one looked really, in some places, not so good. Although I do like the imagination behind them. I did enjoy the Enterprise flying through the sort of like upper atmosphere of the Earth in the beginning of this episode, which is always, I think, that's why this is such a highly regarded and fondly remembered episode, even though it's a bit of nonsense, really.
Yes.
Is that it's got that kind of really famous scene with the Enterprise actually, you know, flying through the sky.
Through clouds, which is cool. Well, it was such a contrast. That was the thing. The contrast of what you were used to. And I remember watching it as a kid in the 70s and, you know, and it was like, wow, you know, this is really...
Yeah.
You know, but I was also at the same time watching those Erin Allen type stuff, and it also had a sort of crossover to that because, you know, all the stock footage that they use for
all the library footage.
It's interesting as well, actually, because I think we talk about remastered later on in our podcast, but I think it's a very important part of this episode, in fairness, because of the contemporary scenes that it has, because it still relies heavily on stock footage.
Yeah,
but and the remastered version can. Carries on with that stock footage, keeps that, apart from the later stages when Captain Christopher is in his fighter and is pursuing the Enterprise, and there is CGI of that fighter as well, which I think is very interesting. Again, I mean, it's sort of like by today's palette, you look at it and go, ooh, that's obvious.
There was one change that they had to do, because there was one exterior shot of his plane that was, you know, on a dark background, on a night background, so and then you go into his cockpit and it's like blue sky, so they, that was just a continuity thing, and I think that's what forced them to do that.
That's probably why they did it then, in that case. Yes. Now, I didn't put that together until, and now that you mention it, yes, I mean, I've seen the original version many times, more times than I've seen the remastered version, but so I've got that stuck on my brain, but only when you jog my memory did I recall that. Yeah, so that's a really, I mean, I like that whole sequence, the setup of the episode is great.
Yeah.
You know, we're going back to Earth, and it must have been great to have been watching it and saying, oh, wow, they're here. You know, they're right here. How much fun is that?
Mm.
And always that's the charm of stuff like that, bringing the extraordinary sort of like into our lives.
But also the American fighters of the time, they look cool.
They really are well designed, beautiful looking killing machines.
It's got a whole sort of right stuff about it, isn't it, that one?
Yes.
And that opening scene actually reminds me a bit of the opening credits to $6 Million Man as well.
Yeah.
That's
really interesting, and also reminded us that, you know, at this point we weren't, no one had gone to the moon yet.
Yeah.
It's still pre-moon landing, and it's still sort of like, you know, underlines just how fantastic Star Trek.
Well, I was just going to say one more thing about the cool American fighters, because growing up in Britain, we, most of our sort of like military aircraft were all sort of World War II stuff that we watched on television. But seeing something like that was really, really cool. And you'd, wow, these look very different to the British sort of like, you know.
Yeah, ours like that. I mean, like British, the British jet fighters were still things like Starfires and stuff like that, weren't they? And very groovy.
And it was all very much in that sort of space age chic, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
I think that's what this episode exudes, isn't it, everywhere, isn't
yeah.
it? And it's really tapping into the time, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Of that, the space race.
That kind of like post-Kennedy optimism. I mean, I assume that the Apollo space program is in full flow as well.
Yeah.
Although they haven't reached the moon, you know, they're sending rockets up into space by this point.
For decades, they had been doing the Gemini program and had been going doing lots orbital.
Let's talk a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of the actual episode itself then. Captain Christopher.
Which is a good classic name, isn't
good it? Good name, yes. Yeah. He's whisked aboard the Enterprise because he's managed to get too close. He's gone up there to have a look. He's turned on his cameras and they've nabbed him. And Roger Perry is the actor who played him, who's I think he's quite a well-known at the time character actor. I mean, I quite enjoyed the byplay with him and Kirk. But I think that there was that sense of camaraderie that existed between the two characters that worked quite nicely.
So there should stages. Be, especially considering how reckless Kirk was. Because, you know, he was warned that, you know, this little ship, this, you know, this fire...
Well, he was warned after they turned on the tractor beam.
You know.
Somebody should have said, "Don't do that."
Don't do that. You'll
don't
kill
do it. That because you'll, you know. I mean, then we wouldn't have had an episode, would we? I suppose.
No, indeed. No, indeed. So, and they had to do something.
Oh, okay.
So,
yes, okay. Absolutely.
Otherwise, it would have been a very boring episode.
Yeah.
However, all the stuff that they do in the episode is rendered meaningless by the last 5 minutes of it.
Yeah, I don't. It's pointless.
Yeah,
because somehow, I mean, I don't get how you can like how does everyone on the Enterprise remember what happened?
Yeah,
and Captain Christopher and your man, your security guard, your unfortunate security guard man, chicken soup guy.
Yeah,
forget.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think they just went. Well, it just will. That's just because.
Yeah, Dorothy said so. That's
yeah. Because DC Fontana is the author of this, as the writer.
Bob Justman was the one who came up with the story.
Oh, really?
And this is another thing. Well, the whole thing about it being a follow-on from Naked Time, but the person who came up with the title and the idea of the show was Bob Justman, the associate editor on the show, or the associate producer. On the show, and he gave the idea to Roddenberry in a memo, and Roddenberry didn't do anything, and then Justman gave him another nod, said he'll come up with the title, said like Tomorrow's Yesterday or All Our Yesterdays, we could have that one as the title for it as well.
Ooh,
this is
okay.
In the memo, and Roddenberry gives the idea to Fontana to say, yeah, come write this for me, and she duly does, and she's the only one who gets a writing credit for it.
Right.
And Bob Justman never got any money for it either.
That's rubbish.
Yes. Yes, another one.
Not entirely consistent with what we've been learning about Gene Roddenberry on while we've been doing these podcasts. Yeah. Okay. Well, in that case, then, Bob Justman deserves a great deal of credit. One specific comedic element that's been put in there has been the Enterprise computer, which has been given a female voice.
Yeah.
Sorry, a female personality. Can I just say, quote, female personality, in the event that you might think that I think that it... And Spock... Sexist Spock.
Sexist Spock. Yes.
He was such a great character, wasn't he? Spock. Absolutely.
Infinite diversity and infinite misogyny.
No flies.
But he is a bit of a mansplainer, isn't he?
Yeah, he's. I mean, it doesn't reflect very well on Spock's character, I think, that whole thing.
We put in a Signet 14 for general repair and maintenance. Signet 14 is a planet dominated by women. They seemed to feel the ship's computer system lacked the personality. They gave it one. Female, of course.
I imagine at the time it was probably terribly funny. It seems a little bit cringeworthy now, and it's the, probably the one element of the episode that really doesn't hold up at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, the, this sort of like thing where we put into this star base populated by women and they made it sound like some kind of, I don't know, really... and so, but it's Nigel Barrett who does the computer voice, and for what it's worth, she does it really well.
Yeah, she does,
because she's a tremendously talented artist and great professional. She had to be a great professional to be able to deal with all of that. It does reflect the comedy element of this show. This is all pretty lightweight. This stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Even though the concepts are really heavy, you know, we have gone back in time. We're in danger of polluting the timeline. We've had to whisk away a guy who, if we don't put him back where he came from, is going to, it's going to alter the fate of the of our futures, possibly irrevocably. But it's all dealt with, you know, with a fairly hefty helping of whipped cream, isn't it? It's not visceral in that respect.
No, it's like Back to the Future with like Marty. His family disappearing. It's there to give you the peril, but without giving you
it's mild peril.
Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely going in the shallow end when it comes to the peril pool.
Yeah.
Voyage Home. I mean, you know, there's that. A lot of that film is sort of like pretty frothy and enjoyable. All the more enjoyable for that. And I quite like that that aspect of it. But they go down to the. They have to go down to the planet. They have to go down to the airbase, don't they? McKinley Airbase, I think it is. So they have an adventure, albeit a fairly low budget adventure, in a few corridors.
It's good to see Sulu there.
Yeah, this is what gets me about this episode, because they really underuse the fact that they're on Earth, and there's a fact that I think they thought this more through in the second season, where you see a lot more sort of familiar 20th century Earth environments because they're cheaper and they're less money on the costumes and everything. Yeah. So,
well, a piece of the action and maybe bread and circuses to an extent. I mean, they make use of the Paramount lot, the Desilu lot.
Pretty much half of the second half of season two is based in some kind of version of Earth, isn't it really?
Those corridors and the airbase, they could have been just redressed Enterprise corridors, couldn't they? That is surprising. I don't know whether or not there's a story behind that. I'm not conscious of one. It does seem a bit surprising. I think it goes to show that, you know, just what a shoestring budget that show was on, and it might well be that it was seen as being a cheap episode to make.
Yeah. Maybe City on this Road was already sumping all the budget away.
Maybe
Roddenberry just was.
Yeah. I mean, you're right, Del. It was good to see Sulu there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good to see him sort of have more of a role, and also. It also looked like that they were actually enjoying themselves as well when they were doing this. And it did hark back to, as you were saying before, sort of like the Voyage Home. Again, it's the same type of sequence.
Yeah.
You know, where sort of like last time you had, in the Voyage Home, you had Chekhov doing the same sort of thing, going into a military base. Yeah. But this time we're trying to find the evidence of the Enterprise existing. And it's, you know, and of course you had the comedy security guard, who, you know, I was expecting him to be Irish as well. You know,
are you referring to Colonel Fellini?
No, the security guard who gets beamed up.
Oh, yeah.
Chicken
soup guy.
Yeah, chicken soup guy. Yeah. You know, so he was basically your typical thick Irish security, you know, a cop or security guard in this case.
Yeah.
Also, the uniform is a bit weird. I thought that it looked like something that had from The Man from U.N.C.L.E. actually. You know how The Man from U.N.C.L.E. always had security guards with, you know, really weird hats and stuff like this, and sort of. I had never seen, you know, a military, you know, American military or Air Force with those small little hats on a jaunty way, and it just didn't look right.
It was fairly jaunty.
It almost looked like a chef's hat almost.
Yeah,
I thought it was a beret. Was it not a beret?
It was a beret. It was a beret.
I mean,
but it was on the bit.
Berets are okay. In
berets
in
are okay, but it just didn't look. It looked a bit more pantomime than proper military.
Yeah, it did look a bit dress up.
Are you suggesting that they might have got that from the costumes department from maybe a really old World War II film or something?
Well,
like
not
that,
even World War II, but I just sort of thinking that they've probably some sort of I don't know, just Irvin Allen or something like that that decided to raid that, you know.
I like the way that when they looked at the big reel-to-reel computers and they sort of like snorted derisively and then they said, oh my God. But of course, for the audience, like those things would have been state-of-the-art.
Yeah.
And they would go, wow, look at those computers. And they go, oh, well, look at the way that the other ones go. Like, look at these.
Well, actually,
it's a bit of a hello computer moment.
I think their attitudes are really interesting because the attitude at the beginning when they don't know much about Earth at all at this sort of period of time, we don't know that much, you know, in the future they actually don't know that much about Earth, and you know, these military aircraft, they're expecting them to have nuclear warheads on all of them. The majority of fighters wouldn't actually have nuclear warheads, but that's what they're expecting.
I mean, it is,
I thought that was quite good.
It's well scripted.
I do like the way that, talking of attitudes, the when they first beam Captain Christopher aboard and he sees a woman on.
Oh yes,
of course he's allowed to have 60s attitudes.
Yeah, because he's
from 60s. But of course, like the crew of the Enterprise, they're from the future, so their attitudes are more like 1970s men.
A woman.
But it was every single woman that actually went by him, he was turning round. Did you know? Yeah. They continued on.
He was checking them out, every single one of them. Yeah.
He was married, and he for God's sake.
Well, that's why. just going back to the Earthbound, but I did enjoy Roger Peck's performance as Colonel Fellini.
Oh, he was great.
Definite echoes of Charles Napier going on there, who's we talked about in The Way to Eden, who usually plays stiff-necked military types. And there was definitely, he was a proto-Charles Napier going on there. Roger Peck's been in a ton of stuff, playing characters very similar to them, you'd understand. But I enjoyed the little byplay there and the fact that they were tossing around the phaser and, you know, and Kirk was like, you know, wincing and like, please don't, you know. I mean, do you think maybe Kirk should have actually said, look, I'll level with you, that's incredibly dangerous, please, you know, you could die? Or is it, you know, more a question of, oh, well, you know, life is cheap, and if it just happens to disintegrate him, then, well, there you go.
Option B,
yeah.
very much.
You know.
But there was a weariness in Kirk's interrogation that I very much enjoyed.
All right, Kirk, maybe this will make you laugh. Sabotage, espionage, unauthorized entry, burglary. How are those for starters? And I can think up lots more if you don't start talking.
All right, Colonel, the truth is I'm a little green man from Alpha Centauri, a beautiful place, you ought to see it.
I am going to lock you up for 200 years.
That ought to be just about right.
Which added to the humour. And I also enjoyed the fight. Kirk's fight.
Yes.
Where he needs to distract.
Yeah.
So he needs, because he could have got away. Yeah. I think the point is he got to the doorway and he could have actually scarpered. But he needed to carry on fighting.
There's
so that
one
Susan
sequence,
could get
out. He throws himself up in the sideways.
It is absolutely brilliant. It's one of the best fist fights on Star Trek.
It is
one of the best.
It is hilarious. The interrogation is obviously as well, going back to Voyage Home, very similar to the interrogation of Chekhov.
It's all good, all fun,
and that's what this episode is, isn't it?
So they get up and they manage to retrieve all the data that they need. And
which they don't need.
Which they don't need. It turns out they don't need. And I mean, even then, there's some nice, byplay between Spock and McCoy as well. Yeah. So we get a little bit of that. We see the advancement of that particular sort of like character dynamic between the two of them. And I like Spock's looking at the film and going, poor photography.
Everyone's a critic.
No one is taking these events terribly seriously. It's almost as if they know what's going to happen next. It ends up with them escaping in the end. They concoct this method whereby they go around the sun and then they go back further in time and then catch up and then drop the two guys back into their time slots.
Yeah, I couldn't get my head around that.
And beam them into themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. because they do that all the time, don't they?
I mean, you could resolve almost any episode of Star Trek by just doing that from now on.
Let's just go around the sun, beam everyone back to what they were doing a day ago.
And then none of this would have happened.
No harm
would have been done.
Yeah. Well, that's it. If they beam someone into themselves, then it should explode or something like
yeah,
this.
Yeah,
you know?
This is what the whole thing of Doctor Who's about why they say, you know, you can't go back into your timeline again because otherwise everything falls apart.
Yeah.
And so you can't say, well, why don't you just go around the sun and come back again? And then, like, yes. It's an awful fudge. And it's an unnecessary fudge because they do all this stuff in the episode to
remove the evidence. So you can just go back and you can say whatever the hell you want. And it doesn't matter because no one's going to believe you. In fact, if anything, in Captain Christopher's case, if you do go back and start ranting about how you were beamed aboard by aliens, you'll end up probably never flying again. And who knows, you might not even end up siring your next child because your life falls apart.
Well, that's it. You'll be in some sort of
colossal nervous breakdown or something like that. Because everybody, because you're going to get massively debriefed. And so, I mean, it's an elegant way to end the story by sort of like saying, we're going to pop you back and you'll remember nothing. So, and it's fine. But yeah, it does render the entire third reel sort of completely pointless.
Yes.
Not worth doing. But I mean, I suppose if they'd just been sat up there twiddling their thumbs talking about the cricket, it would have probably not made for a terribly exciting episode.
I guess not.
But I think that's the thing about the episode, isn't it? Critically, objectively, it's a poor episode, and yet it's a well-remembered episode. And I watched it obviously in preparation for this episode of this podcast. And I enjoyed it as much as I have enjoyed it whenever I've watched it before. It's just a load of fun.
Yeah, that's what it is. It is a fun episode. And yeah, I suppose it's... We're more used to analysing stuff these days when presented in a TV show.
Yeah.
Than maybe we were back then. Obviously, we can rewatch and rewatch stuff as much as we like.
Yeah.
And pick out holes in these things and read reviews that other people have written as well online about them. But which, of course, wasn't really that much of an issue back then. So
it was intended to be watched once.
Once, and really. That's it, yeah.
I mean, it's slightly different because obviously Star Trek got syndicated massively, so it was one of the first TV shows or one of the earliest examples of a TV show that was rewatched over and over and over again because it went into syndication. But the principle of all of those shows, even stuff like Bonanza, the really old, heavily repeated and syndicated stuff was the likelihood is that people are only ever going to watch this once. So it doesn't really matter. It's not going to bear that much scrutiny because no one's going to watch it again. They're not going to pick holes in the plot. And of course, that's not what's happened. So that always creates difficulties for new writers, of course.
Yeah. They tell a fun story and the principles take it all in their stride.
Yeah. And if the viewer, if some viewers have something in the back of their mind saying, there's parts of that story that didn't really make any sense, then, it's fine because the next thing's on in a few minutes and there's an advert for soap to distract them.
The wonderful thing about Star Trek, though, with classic Star Trek is that they take some really good ideas.
Mm.
And usually they follow them through and actually make a really good deal. And there are some nice little kernels of the time travel thing, obviously.
Yeah.
The thing about sort of like the black hole, or the black star.
Mm.
Obviously, we know it's like they're talking about sort of gravitational pull of a black hole, and then the slingshot stuff, we know that's used all the time as well with proper sort of space exploration
Voyager.
One assumes that the slingshot effect is based upon some kind of scientific principle.
So there are good little kernels of really good bits and pieces. It's just how they...
And it has a tremendous legacy as well, this episode in Star Trek lore because of the slingshot effect.
Mm.
And its similarity with Voyage Home. But the slingshot effect has been a trope that has been used, I think, in original Star Trek fiction quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So although it is actually a bit of a throwaway episode, there's elements of it. It's part of the building blocks of Star Trek. The reference to United Earth Space Probe Agency.
That's strange.
Interestingly enough, that turns up in Enterprise when they go back to Earth in Enterprise in the fourth season. I'm pretty certain on the floor there's a big logo that's got United Earth Space Probe Agency in there.
Okay.
So they managed to try and weave it in as part of the many institutions that makes up the people who fund Starfleet,
mm-hmm.
And also including the United Federation of Planets. So we get a bit of we have some world building going on there, because Kirk has to explain the context to Captain Christopher. And thereby we learn a little bit more about the whole Star Trek universe, which of course then gets expanded upon. So a valuable episode for those of us who are into our Star Trek lore. Does anybody have anything else that they want to say about this episode?
No, that's all
okay
good.
Then. Well, in that case, we're going to stop.
Okay.
So,
are we going to beam ourselves out of here into our own bodies and forget all about this as well?
Yes, yes, we are. What we're going to do is we're going to get an Uber down to the football, but first, and we're going to ask it to slingshot itself around the sun first, because Uber will do that.
Okay.
For an extra pound and a 5-star review, at 5-star rating, and then that way we will never know this happened. And on that note, from me, Terry Fallon, and from Derek Mantle, and from Graham Sibley, it's goodbye.
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 Or hello.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of Whom Pods Destroy. We hope that you enjoyed the episode and that you enjoy this podcast in general. If so, why not subscribe via Apple or Stitcher or Acast or any podcatcher of your choice? Go to whompodsdestroy.com for all the feeds you need. And if you do subscribe, then we cannot overstate the value of you placing a favourable rating on your podcatcher of choice, preferably 5 stars. It helps to promote the show. You can contact us directly by emailing garth@whompodsdestroy.com, and we're also on Twitter @whompodsdestroy. Our next edition will be about the final episode of the second season of the original series, which could actually have been the final ever episode if the studio executives had had their way. So join us next time as we review Assignment Earth.
Computed and recorded, dear.